Hello, everyone. My name is Luke Jean-Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thank you for joining us today. We're in for a treat. We have, my guest is Coach Gail Jones, and we're very fortunate to have Coach Gail Jones with us. So where do I even begin? So I'm going to have to start somewhere. So Coach Gail Jones has an amazing story, and she is someone who is a nationally recognized worthiness coach, a transitions expert, author of two books, and I believe a third one that's coming out soon. She's also a teacher, a blogger, a fellow podcaster, and the name of her two books, just so you know, that have come out are Cancer is a Love Story, and as well as To Hell and Back. And she's someone who's been featured in many media outlets. She's someone who's a guest writer for Maria Shriver's Sunday paper. She's also been featured on Sirius XM Radio. She's also been featured on CBS's Emmy Award-winning TV program, The Doctors. So amazing to have you here. And she's also someone who's overcome a bout of breast cancer. And through that journey, she discovered that claiming one's worthiness is very critical to extending one's longevity. And she's also an executive contributor to Brains Magazine, and she's also a recipient of Brains Magazine's prestigious CREA Global Award, which is given to creative entrepreneurs making a difference in the field of mental health. So we're very fortunate to have you here, that you were able to carve out some time in your packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. Can you go ahead and describe all the ways that, let me back up for a second. Can you tell us about your background and how you first gravitated towards doing what you do today?
Sure. But first of all, I want to thank you, Luke, for having me on your podcast. The care and thought you put into creating such a wonderful podcast is really significant. So I appreciate you inviting me as a guest. I'm honored to be here today. So how I gravitated to what I'm doing now, I started my career as a journalist and then a PR exec. But inside of me was always the urge to serve. And I have a very nurturing side. So I knew even when I was doing high-tech PR, as much as I was serving by helping people articulate their messages to the world, there was a part of me that wasn't being expressed, and that's a nurturing side. So I took a year off from that whole career and wrote my first book, To Hell and Back, Healing Your Way Through Transition, and then found out that, yes, I really am a nurturer. And I was teaching classes for adults in transition at the time, and somebody told me, you know, you're really a coach. You should go get your coach training. And when I walked into the room, I just felt like I came home. This is what I was meant to do.
Well, that's amazing. That's incredible. So you first started off working in high-tech PR, public relations, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you had this urge to want to nurture, like, mm-hmm. and you had to feed that urge. And, you know, Mark Twain once said everyone has two birthdays, the day they were born, the day they figure out why, right?
Right.
And you dope over your birthdays, which is incredible. And so you took a year off from that. So you can engage that kind of nurturing side, right? And you wrote your first book, which is incredible. Not a lot of people, a lot of people have the dream to write a book but never actually fulfill it, unfortunately.
Right.
And a lot of work goes into writing a book, and it's tough for a lot of people.
Right. I just
really
want to
busy.
Say something on that book and even the second book. And the first one, To Hell and Back, Healing Your Way Through Transition, that book took me 12 years to complete. Because I started it originally talking about career transition, which I was in, leaving, you know, being a journalist and a high-tech PR exec to coaching. But also it ended up entailing four transitions, becoming a mother and then coping with death, losing my parents, and then moving on from there. So every time I thought I was done, there was one more transition I wanted to teach. And it's so funny now because the whole world's in transition. But back then, people didn't even understand what the word transition meant. It was new to people. you know, we were, a lot of people were programmed, you know, on the career path to stay on that path, to stay, get the gold watch. And it's not like that, you know, anymore. And so I think the book is even more important now because I walk people through the internal journey to changing your life.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I did the same with my book, Cancer is a Love Story, and that's called Cancer is a Love Story, Developing the Mindset for Living. But what I really believe is that cancer is a wake-up call to change your life. And I know that people don't like hearing that because it's, you know, so challenging to go through. But I totally changed my lifestyle. And I also, the inner work I did from healing through cancer really transformed my coaching in significant ways. And had I not gotten cancer, I wouldn't have got the insights that I now share with my clients. Whether they've had cancer or not, there are very core lessons to learn that can change your life. And I'd love to share them with you during this podcast.
Absolutely. And, you know, going through cancer obviously is not easy, but it's interesting that you were able to find the good from that and you were able to grow from that, you know, horrible experience of having cancer. And, you know, that is so amazing.
I think we have a choice point with any adversity we have, the pandemic, whether it's cancer, whether it's a divorce, whatever we're going through in life. And, you know, do you want to handle it with love or do you want to handle it with fear? And that's how I got the name of my book, Cancer as a Love Story. And I chose love. That doesn't mean I didn't have fearful moments. I was very scared when I first got diagnosed. It was scary to tell my kids. I didn't know what stage I was. But I chose to go through the journey in love and love for myself. And it might have been the first time I ever embraced self-love as a concept. Like, I needed it to survive. So I had to integrate it. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. So my understanding is that you've rebranded you know, you've obviously been a coach for quite some time, right?
Mm-hmm.
For a few decades. 20 years, which is amazing. And so absolutely incredible. And so in the beginning, you know, it was called something different, right? You went by a different brand, but then, right.
Yeah, it was originally called supportmatters.com. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years, I rebranded it to claimyourworthiness.com. Mm-hmm. And then when those three doctors and naturopaths told me that claiming your worthiness to live can extend your longevity, I took a step back and dived deep for 9 years. And I said, well, if claiming worthiness can extend your longevity, what else can it do? And I realized that most of my clients, when they came to me and they were stuck, underneath was really a worthiness issue. And I want to say something that really stresses for everybody. A lack of worthiness, you did nothing wrong for having a lack of worthiness. Most of us don't have an adequate sense of worthiness. And worthiness comes from, we're born worthy, it's there, but we unlearn it because of the way we were conditioned, usually during the first 6 to 7 years of life. In order to feel worthy, to feel it, really feel it, move from it, you have to be seen, heard, validated, and acknowledged. And even like I'll tell people, you can take all the seminars in the world, read all the books in the world, but to really ingrain that sense of worthiness, you have to be witnessed. Because the reason you didn't have it, you don't have it, is you didn't get that witnessing, so you need it to heal. And the other thing is, even if you had, and we're not here to beat up our parents, they're just modeling what was modeled to them. They weren't taught these tools. But even if you had worthiness or had a great upbringing, there's life curveballs that will shake your worthiness. And even great curveballs, like when you're elevating in life, when you're up-leveling, all that worthiness stuff will come up again. Am I worthy of this position? Am I worthy of this great relationship? So you'll get triggered again and have to take another round at looking at your worthiness. And it's really key because as we're elevating, we're born to grow, right? But it's so easy to sabotage when we don't feel worthy. So it's really key to know the core belief of knowing you're worthy and claiming it. And I teach clients a process of going through that to claim it, which has really shifted their lives dramatically. Monetarily.
Oh, that's amazing. Monetarily in other ways as well.
Yes.
So that's incredible. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, we always talk about, or you always hear about these near-death experiences people get when they're close to dying and they come upon some realizations. And, you know, I'm guessing that very well happened in your situation, right? And
right.
you you stumbled upon these discoveries, and you understand that worthiness, claiming your worthiness, is absolutely important in terms of increasing the quality of your life, in terms of increasing years to your life. And but it all starts in the beginning, right? You talk about those first years of a person's life as a kid. We're born with it, right? But then we lose it in some cases, or in many cases with some folks.
Well, we don't get the core belief instilled. So, and what happens as a little kid, we don't have discernment skills until ages 7 to 12. So from 0 to 6 or 0 to 7. So here's an example of how a belief is formed. Say you have a parent, a dad, or there's a dad, who works a lot, right? Could be the mom. I'm going to use an example for now because it's from a past client. And you're a little kid, you're like 4 years old, and dad's always working, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dad comes home, hey, how you doing? But, you know, he has to get back to work or whatever, right? Or he has to travel a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a little kid, you don't know that that's his life, that he has to do that. So you can make a belief right away that I'm not worthy or I don't matter. I don't matter is another core limiting belief we carry throughout.
Right.
It has nothing to do with he didn't matter. But you don't have the discernment skills as a little kid, so you make it believe that you don't matter because dad's not paying attention to me. So it's as simple as that. And that belief can carry you for your entire life. And
wow.
When we try to express our emotions and somebody doesn't see, hear, or validate them, again, we don't feel we're worthy. We're worthy of all of us, and to have that mirrored back to us is really important. But the
Absolutely.
Good news, I want to say this too about the cancer healing journey. It led me to Arizona, where I finished the book. I'm originally from Boston. I live in North Carolina now. And when I was in Arizona, I trained with Dr. Joe Dispenza, world-renowned neuroscientist, who helped me learn how to rewire my brain to heal my body.
Mm.
So I use that in my coaching now, you know, rewiring the brain. Neuroplasticity, we can change that early condition, which is so exciting now. And back to the claim your worthiness, and when you introduced me and you said, you know, I'm a certified high self-esteem coach for parents, educators, and kids, my big dream is that this worthiness platform reaches young children, especially in young adults. You know, most of my clients are 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, sometimes in the 20s. But when a lot of the parents that I coach now send me their college students or high school students, when I teach them the worthiness platform, they get it right away. They get it really quickly. So they're going to go through their life making career choices, partner choices, on knowing they're worthy, instead of having to rewire all that and make a lot of mistakes from not knowing their worthiness, right? So it's really exciting. The younger you can teach this to people, the better.
Wow, that's amazing. And it's so important, I'm almost jealous of all these folks that get to train with you who are young, who are in their 20s and whatnot.
Right.
And they get to, you know, you get to establish those strong habits early in life, in the beginning, you know. And so I think that's amazing. And, it's interesting how it all starts with the young. So, you know, just to correct myself earlier, so we're not really so much born with it. We're sort of like a blank slate, so to speak. But then due to our environment as kids, maybe there's abandonment issues when the dad has to go to work and we don't understand what's going on because we're kids, you know. And that all can stay with us for the rest of our lives unless, of course, we rewire and take advantage of that that science of neuroplasticity, right? I hope I said that correctly.
Yes. But I wanted to say something. It's not just our childhood, because even our society conditions us to believe we're not enough, and not enough is very aligned with worthiness. You don't have enough unless you have the bigger house, the bigger car, all of that. And I know the world's being shaken up in a new way now, but you could have had the most ideal childhood possible and still not feel worthy based on societal conditioning, which wants us to be materialistic and have more and buy more and do more. And if you don't have it, you're not enough. So, and the other thing about worthiness, it's very interesting. You know, I remember when I was first rebranding and I was first on TV, one of the publicists I know said to me, make sure you talk about people that are very successful. And it was very important because you could be externally successful and still have a huge lack of worthiness. Because worthiness is based on who you are, not what you do. So, and I'll just even share my own story that, you know, I looked highly successful for many years, you know, edited the paper, all of those other things. And when I took a hard look at my own lack of worthiness, I realized I was overcompensating for some dysfunction in my childhood. And no matter how hard I worked or how hard I pushed, that hole was still in me. Nothing outside can give you worthiness. You have to give it to yourself. And that was a huge lesson. And so a lot of successful people, a lot of driven people, a lot of that drive is unmet needs from their childhood.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, it, obviously parenting and raising children is not easy. It doesn't come with a textbook or, you know, and a lot of parents, you know, they raise their kids the way they were raised. And so a lot of those bad parenting habits and whatnot tend to get passed down, unfortunately, like abuse, physical abuse and whatnot. And it's very unfortunate. And so, but I do agree with you. A lot of issues are because of those unmet childhood needs that were never fulfilled or handled correctly. And so that is absolutely so true. Yes.
Right. And back to the parents, you know, and even when I was training to be a high self-esteem certified coach, I'm going, wow, I wasn't taught any of this. And even in coaching, I wasn't taught some of this, right? And so how could we expect parents to know it? Like, so let me just give you an example that might help people understand. People have a perception that high self-esteem is like, you know, on a stage, you know, ego-driven, right? This is really key to understand. So high self-esteem, if you're teaching it to yourself or to your kids, there are low self-esteem emotions and high self-esteem. We are all hardwired in for them. So fear, anger, and sadness are low self-esteem emotions. And we have a predominant one we go to, and we all have all of them. And especially right now, what we've all been through in the world, you know, a lot of those are getting triggered, right?
Absolutely. And so,
go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say just go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go. Go ahead.
I was going to say real quickly it's interesting how you're definitely educating me on this, that there's low self-esteem emotions and high self-esteem emotions, and we sort of hooked up ups and downs. And I guess people's self-esteems aren't as stable. It's not always the same across the board, so to speak.
85% of us have a self-esteem issue, have or have had a self-esteem issue in one area of life. 85%. That's a big number.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a huge number, yeah.
So I want to share the high self-esteem because it's very misunderstood. So the low self-esteem, again, when you swim too much time in the anger, fear, or sadness, right? And again, I'm an advocate of feeling your feelings, and when clients work with me, we'll go through the deepest, darkest feelings. So it's important to feel them to release them. So, but it's important to know which one you go to, and sticks with you too long, maybe, right? So you have a choice when you're in one of those low self-esteem emotions. To be able to shift into a higher self. So high self-esteem is based on, now it's not that ego thing that we all thought, right? It's based on gratitude, empathy, and forgiveness. How many of us were taught to live in gratitude, empathy, and forgiveness? Those three ways of being are high self-esteem. And it seems so simple, and it's not taught. Like, I would love this to be the life curriculum in schools, right?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you. And so, you know, it's funny how a lot of these things that, you know, I didn't learn any of this in school. A lot of these things I learned from reading books and from other people, like coaches like yourself, who talked about the importance of gratitude and the importance of forgiveness and empathy. And, you know, it's interesting how, you know, every day in the morning, if you write a couple things down that you're grateful for, your mood tends to improve over time. And so, you know, there's definitely a science to that. And I think the studies show how important gratitude is. And, you know, because it's easy to take things for granted. And so, you know, that like my ability to have sight and to see things and whatnot. and my ability to walk. You know, not everyone has those things, but to recognize, identify it, and appreciate those things does help to improve your spirit. And so definitely agree. I think gratitude is important. Yes.
Right, and even in the empathy piece, like you know Don Miguel Ruiz's book, The Four Agreements. You know, one of them is don't take things personally. And so often we do take things personally. And when you look at empathy, when somebody is mean or mistreats us, it's not like we let them walk over us. But when somebody is mean, like a bully, for example, the reason they're that way, number one, a bully has low self-esteem, right? But second of all, they're in pain. So it's not about you. And
right.
That's, you know, to be able to teach somebody that when somebody is mean or that they have an issue, it's not you. You didn't cause them to be mean, especially teaching young children this, the empathy.
Wow, that's amazing. And, that's why you go down that path of forgiveness, because you understand that, you know, you have sympathy for the person who's causing you pain because they're in pain, of course, the
right.
bullying type.
And I don't want to say, but and also, we have to have empathy and forgiveness for ourselves. So here's a word that I find really empowering. You know, there's so much work. There's so many buzzwords out there now. They're not buzzwords, but they overuse self-love and compassion. They're very, very important. They were very important in my healing journey in cancer. I don't even think I knew what self-love and self-compassion was until, you know, I was just so driven before then. But here's a word that I think is even more powerful. When we look at our lives up till now and the mistakes we made, what we didn't get, what happened, and again, understanding it was based on that conditioning of the first 7 years of life, those are subconscious limiting beliefs. But if you look at your life up till now and decide this is going to be a new story today, right, or going forward, and you look at that story with mercy, it's so different than just saying self-love. Mercy is like, and it's not, it doesn't mean you stay there, but mercy, like, wow, I've been through a lot of tough stuff. And it just opens. When I do it with clients, they start sobbing and they go, wow, I've never given myself mercy. That's a big difference than self-love.
Wow. That's amazing. And so self-love ties in with self-mercy and self-forgiveness, and it's so important that we forgive ourselves, because we all have to forgive ourselves and show that self-love and self-compassion, of course.
All right, and then with mercy. I screwed up. Okay, I didn't have the skills at that age, or I didn't have the wisdom at that age. I have mercy that I lived through that pain because I didn't know better.
Wow. And, you know, it's incredible that you, when you meet with clients and you go through these sessions and you coach these clients, you go on a discovery along with them. You guide them through that journey where it does get emotional, where they do cry and whatnot, but they come out from it on the other side a better person, right? And
yeah.
So, you know, I think the work you do is very much needed in society. And I think you do God's work, and I think I think there are so many people who need the services that you provide as a worthiness coach. And so I'm curious now. Obviously, coaching is something that can benefit many people, and I can go on and on and on about why everyone needs a coach. But I'm curious now. You've probably met these kind of individuals who say that they don't need a coach. They don't get the point of a coach. Why do I need to pay someone to tell me what to do, so to speak? And I can learn this from a book or learn this on my own. What would you say to them?
Well, first of all, I'm going back to like instilling a greater sense of worthiness. In order to instill that, you have to be witnessed. So you need someone to witness you, right? So that's one reason to need a coach. The second reason to need a coach is we have our own limited perspective. And again, those limiting beliefs often run our lives. It's very hard, almost impossible, to find those subconscious limiting beliefs by yourself. So like if I'm working with somebody and I can pretty much, I'm highly intuitive, I've been doing this 20 years, but I can pretty much tell in the first conversation what limiting beliefs are running their lives. And you see patterns that appear, like if you tell me your relationship history and your career history, and your financial history, I'll see common threads and I'll know what that belief is that's blocking you. And you wouldn't be able to find that yourself.
Wow, that's amazing. That's so incredible. And it's curious. Now, obviously, we're talking about how worthiness is significant to helping people get unstuck financially, both personally, and the steps one could take to instill that the proper mindset. And you help people. You sort of diagnose what the issue is, right, in terms of the patterns, in terms of the threads and whatnot. And you get to the bottom of the matter so it could be fixed. So you can help instill that mindset, so to speak. So that's amazing.
What's really exciting is also, you know, because I'm trained in neuroscience, is, you know, Dr. Joe Dispenza will continually say, we create anew by a clear intention plus an elevated emotion, right? And they sound simple, clear intention and elevated emotion. But even like for myself, when I'm doing my own vision board, and I do them very different than how they're done, I use a lot of neuroscience and keywords, different things. It's my customized way of doing it. But it takes me 4 months to get clear sometimes to put 6 pictures up there that really represent what I want. So clear intention plus elevated emotion is how you create anew. But how many people know what the elevated emotions are? If you've been in anger, sad, and fear, and anger, sadness, and fear most of your life, and you're telling someone to get an elevated emotion, they don't even know what they are. So what I'd like to do for your guests tonight is listeners, I'd like to share some empowering words that can help them get into the elevated emotions. Would you like to do that?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, and again, I always tell my clients to write down the words in capital letters. I've been told the brain sees best in capital letters. So here are some words, and I actually have mine on a board, and I look at them first thing in the morning. So here they are. The first word, they don't have in this order, but I'll just share. Fascination, awe, A-W-E, so in case you got stuck on my Boston accent, awe, inspiration, wonder, trust, appreciation, kindness, joy, gratitude, which we talked about, excitement, enthusiasm, love. And these are the two other words I add, alignment and compassion.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing those words. And, you know, I'm learning so much from you. I'm taking down notes as you talk. You're talking about how the brain likes to see words in all caps. So I'm going to start using that going forward and whatnot.
Especially when you're setting your intention.
Wow, okay. So this is definitely an episode I'll be listening and re-listening to quite a lot, of course. And it's interesting. Now, you talk in ways that are different from most other coaches, which is wonderful in my opinion, not a bad thing. I'm curious now, there are so many coaches out there. What's your competitive advantage as a coach? I think I already know, but I'd love to hear it in your own words. Like, what makes you stand out as a coach?
I think... one is I've been doing it 20 years, so I'm highly intuitive, and I just get things quickly. But I think the other thing that really distinguishes me from other coaches, and everyone has their unique gifts, right? But I've been a writer for 40 years. You know, I just won that award for my writing. So when I am helping a client clear their limiting beliefs, right, I use a tool called EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, and other tools, but EFT. And you can download that. People can take scripts off of the internet and use it. But EFT works best when the statements are specific and customized. So if I'm doing a clearing on you, Luke, for example, on some of the limiting beliefs or blocks, it's customized to you. I'm not going to give the same script to somebody in the next 2 hours. But this is key that brings in the writing. So then I tap in. Empowering words and beliefs for you. Those are, again, are customized to you. And it's because I've been a writer for 40 years that the words get downloaded to me. It's like a gift. It really is a gift from God. The writing is my gift. The words are my gift. And if I can just share an example of how that plays out, I'd love to just show how, like, a word got downloaded and how it shifted somebody's life.
Absolutely.
So I was, a lot of times for a while there, before pandemic, things were different, but I used to coach clients one session perhaps and would walk, and I'd have them walk one way, letting go of the past and limiting beliefs, and then would turn around and walk into the new. And as they're walking into the new, I'm listening to them, and then I'm telling them words to step into, to physically step into. So I was coaching a woman who was recently divorced, and we walked one way, you know, she was crying and the anger and getting all that out. And when we turned around to walk back, I just got this download, like it was just an intuitive download. And I asked her, I said, have you ever been cherished? And all of a sudden she just, you know, broke open, started crying, and like, I don't even know what that means. I don't know what that feels like. I didn't know that word was going to come. I didn't script it. I didn't plan it. I just listened and I just knew, and the word came. And then we walked back into stepping into being cherished, what that would feel like, and dream. So that changed her life dramatically. She didn't even allow for the possibility before then that she could be cherished. So I feel the way I play with words and know words and get downloaded words are really different. It's really a gift. And like even when I'm doing EFT with a client, I just get so many. And then I pull together the story, and then I pull together the new story with new words that are customized to that client.
That's amazing that, you know, and thank you for sharing that incredible story. And words are so important, thoughts are so important, particularly the things that we say to ourselves all the time. You know, we tend to have very negative self-talk. I think this is very common, that those automatic negative thoughts, they call them ants. And I deal with ants. I got to stomp those ants. I got to replace those ants with other thoughts, you know. And so it's amazing. So you're skilled in EFT. Oh, which I've definitely heard of, this, the tapping.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But then, no worries. You can go ahead. You can interrupt me.
I'm trained in EFT. I've been a writer for 40 years. I'm trained in neuroscience, and I also am trained in some energy psychology tools as well. So they all go together, but it's really the intuition that drives it. I just want to go back to something you just said, Luke, and I love when you talked about your negative thoughts, the ants, right? So it's really fun.
Right.
We come up with different tools to block them. Here's one that I've used that I've shared with my clients that they like, but you'll find your own image. But I have an image when I find those negative thoughts flowing in of a big red stop sign, and I put it in front of my face, front of my head, and it's like, no, they're not coming in. I just put the stop sign up. So that sometimes I find using an image helps.
Wow, that's amazing. That's I'm definitely going to try to apply that with the red stop sign. I know when I see a red stop sign, I know what I do, right? I stop.
Right.
So
I make it really big. It's really, like, it's much bigger than my head, right? It's huge. And here's another tip I learned from an energy healer in the UK, a very talented man who helped me through breast cancer, and he's in my book. But sometimes when we're very hard on ourselves sometimes, and a lot of that self-criticism is protective. But anyways, one of the things that he taught me that really helped me was when we're hard on ourselves, we're kind of putting ourselves on a hook. So I had this image of me on a hook. It's actually a little small image of me on a hook, but on a hook. And when I find myself being too harsh or critical, I see myself taking myself off the hook and running around. It's just another image that worked well for me.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to use that one as well, because I'm also hard on myself a lot. So I'm like my own toughest critic. And so I got to learn to show myself mercy, self-love, and self-compassion, and get off the hook and whatnot. I'm curious. Now, you shared several stories with us, one of which where you had spoken about to the woman the word cherish, and it just unleashed all these emotions and whatnot, because she realized that she never had felt truly cherished in her life. Obviously, I'm hoping that's different now. But I'm curious, can you go ahead and tell us any other moving or entertaining stories from your life or career?
Yeah, I'll tell you one more client story, and then I'll tell you a story about my career actually going on TV. But there was one other client I was coaching, and on the beach, we walked one way, letting go, and then turned around the other way and stepping into the new. Just as we were about to turn around, It was one of those sunny days, and the sand was kind of purple. It was called Plum Island, actually. But as we were turning around, and this was an IT person, very left brain, and we're seeing the diamond. She said, "Oh, look at the sand. It's like sparkling like diamonds." And she goes, "Oh, my God." She goes, "This is magical." And, you know, she'd been very stressed. She was the breadwinner. Her husband was the at-home dad, and but she was carrying a lot. And she just said, "Look at that magic." And then she goes, "Oh, my God, my mother's talking to me." And her mother had passed away. And I said, "What is your mother saying?" And she said, "Well, it's just that I had a magical childhood. My parents really made our life magical." She goes, "There's no magic in my life now. All I do is work." So when we walked back, we stepped into the magic. What would it feel like to be magical? What would it be? What would be in your life now instead of all work? And there were things like I'd spend more time with my kids, we'd go camping, we'd go to Disney. It's 10 years later now, and she tells me that was the most defining moment of her life. She shifted to a four-day-a-week job in a less demanding environment. She took her kids to Disney. She camps all the time. She's now a yoga instructor, too. So that was an example of, you know, and then when these hits come, you go with them, and you're getting this wise information. Use it, right? But I also think...
Absolutely.
Yeah, and here's a personal story. So when I was invited to be on The Doctors, the CBS show, I felt very confident on my message. I had spent 9 years learning worthiness deeply and rewiring it myself. And so I felt confident with the message, but you only have 3 minutes. It was a three-minute clip, right? For a lot of three. Right?
Yeah.
Like I had to send them 65 photos for them to pick, you know, a couple. But I knew that I could articulate the message, but inside it was that inner child, that little kid from 0 to 6, right? That inner child who I also knew I had to make feel safe. And this is something a lot of people don't teach. So when we're up leveling or going for something, a big leap like this, you have to make sure that the inner child feels safe. Are you following me with that?
Absolutely. And you have to make sure that your inner child is safe for the TV appearance.
Right. And I knew I was sharing a lot of vulnerabilities in those 3 minutes. I was talking about my own childhood. I had a schizophrenic mom, which is why I didn't get the worthiness. And again, you know, she had a brain disease. I love and forgive her, right? But I was saying that to 4 million people, right? So 4 million people, like, who would know the inner part of my life. And so I had to reassure my little girl within that no matter what happened, if my family abandoned me for sharing that, because it was so part of my journey of healing, if nobody liked the show, nobody liked me, I was going to be okay. I was going to take care of that inner child. And it was a profound moment. It's like a big leap. And it's really important that we always honor the inner child within. And for the rest of our lives, we have a relationship with that child. And you let that inner part of you that was hurt or wounded or just wants to express themselves, you acknowledge it every day.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing those stories, that personal story of yourself in terms of protecting that inner child. And we all have that inner child that we have to kind of look after and protect. Obviously, they don't run the show, but they're there and you have to supervise them correctly. So thank you so much for sharing that. I'm curious now, and obviously you talked about the woman who had that experience. She had experienced, I guess, her second birthday, as Mark Twain would say, and she became a yoga instructor. She did all these things and whatnot in a four-day week. That's incredible because she understood the value of time. Instead of spending it so much on work, she wanted to spend more time with the family, camping and whatnot. That's an amazing story and quite inspiring. You know, so many people on that rat race, hamster wheel kind of thing. You know, and so she got all
really clear that. Going back to the words, if I just said to her work-life balance, which we all hear, right? Let's do work-life balance. It wouldn't have had the same impact than playing with the word magic. What does magic feel to you? That was the shift. If the other client, when the word cherish, if I just said, you know, how, you know, if we talked on healing the marriage or opening to a new relationship, but giving her the word cherish, and learning to cherish herself, because we have to give to ourselves what we want from others, right? But it's those words that made a difference than just, you know, the basic words we might have heard that resonated with the client.
Wow. Sometimes, you know, when you hear words, they just hit right. You know, that happens with me whenever I read a great quote. It's sort of something about the putting the words together does something for me and really helps me. It helps to connect things. And so
right.
I totally get that. Right.
And you just did a beautiful new word for me when you said those thoughts that spiral us down, the ants. I love that, the ants.
Yeah.
And when you think of them as the ants, they're kind of little too, right? So they don't have to be so big and interfering.
Yeah.
I love those words you had for those thoughts. So thank you for that.
You got it. And I'm feeling some sort of way because, you know, the fact that I was able to inspire a professional expert like you with some words, you know, is exciting for me as well. So I'm glad you liked it. I took it from somewhere else, and as we all do with words and quotes and whatnot. But I'm glad that that you liked it and you're going to start using it. I'm curious now. Obviously, you've been a coach for quite some time, right? And
mm-hmm.
you've had a lot of success, I would say, of course. And you've been featured on TV and whatnot, and I'm sure as a coach you get a lot of referrals, and so I always tell people the importance of networking so you can get referrals, or
mm-hmm.
they can get referrals from customers that have enjoyed the experience and whatnot. I'm curious, what networking advice do you have for folks? Because, you know, we met through networking, through a mutual connection and whatnot.
I think the first thing is that you don't go into networking with what you can get. It's what you can give. If you go into what you can get, or you're just trying to sell, you're just trying to sign somebody on, they know. I think networking is about building relationships. And even, like, I give the example of when I got into Maria Shriver's Sunday paper. Everybody told me I would never get into her paper unless I had a million followers, and there's many reasons why I don't, and I don't want to get into this here. But I did something very different. I really built a relationship with her over a year and a half. And when I found, like, my readers are her readers. A lot of my clients have come from her, but I've given a lot of people to her to read the Sunday paper. But I built a relationship. I only sent her information when it was relevant to her topic or her heart, what I thought was her heart. So it took a year and a half. It wasn't a million followers, but I made it happen. But it was authentic. I would just say, be authentic. People know when you're salesy and just in for the hit. And, I mean, I genuinely thought my message would genuinely touch her readers, and it did. So, and promote others. You know, when you make a connection, like, you know, I'm going to promote your podcast, give back and nurture the relationship. It's not a hit just to get a referral. It's a relationship. That would be my advice, to really value the relationship. And relationships take time to build. They're not overnight. You know, when we really want to give a referral to somebody, right, we have to trust them. Trust is earned, right? So
absolutely.
Build trusting relationships.
Yes, that's exactly true. I agree with you, because we only do business with people that we know, like, and trust. So there is something definitely to that. And I loved how you talk about it's not about what you get, it's about what you give. You know, you had that relationship with Maria Shriver where for a year and a half you were giving her things that she would find helpful. And she enjoyed that, you know, authenticity. So despite not having millions of followers, you were still able to, you know, get that role as a contributor to her Sunday paper and whatnot. And so I think that's an amazing story. That's incredible. And it also, it just goes to the power of relationships, because I always tell people that the number one secret to success is other people. That's why it's so important to network. And just for, I could speak for hours on and hours upon why that's the number one, but I won't do that. But I'm curious now, you know, and thank you so much for sharing that wonderful story with Maria Shriver and how you, and the importance of networking and whatnot. Obviously, you've been coaching for quite some time. In terms of referrals, I was just curious, you know, I love to give referrals. Well, what types of people do you work with mostly as a coach, and what do I have to hear from someone in order for me to refer them to you?
I would say one is they're stuck, or they're up-leveling. They're looking to be a bigger version of themselves in the world. They know they can be, but they might not know how to get there, so they need a mentor. And young people, you know, especially with the pandemic, their world's been rocked. I would love right now for them not to get a limiting belief created as a result of the pandemic. So, you know, this is really key for people to understand, especially with all that's going on in our world right now. We are not our circumstances. If we focus on our circumstances, we will stay stuck. We are not our circumstances. We are much more powerful than our circumstances. And, you know, that's why I would love every high school student, every college student to know this, that your world got rocked, and it doesn't seem fair that you had so much thrown at you right now. You know, this is, but don't define yourself by the external circumstances. You have a power within you. You have a greatness within you. You have a worthiness within you to be anything you want to be.
So, wow, thank you. Go ahead, sorry. Yeah.
No, you go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I apologize for that. But thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, I do feel for young people who are going through these tough times, particularly with the pandemic, and they need to understand that it's not their fault and they need to stay strong and whatnot. I'm curious now, what advice would you give to someone who's interested in being a coach, who's hearing you and saying, you know, I want to do what she's doing, you know, what Gail's doing. I'd love to be a coach and to help uplift people.
I'd first say you could have all the training in the world. You can get all the certificates. You can go to all the seminars. You have to do the inner work. You want to be there as a healed healer, right? I don't like that word wounded healer, which is often used in the healing professions. I mean, healing is a journey, a lifetime journey. So, you know, it's not like reaching a point, but you have to do the inner work to help other people. Had I not been through a divorce, had I not been through cancer, had I not been through the loss of both my parents, those types of life events transformed me. And each one of them, I did the inner work around. So when I'm coaching a client, I've already walked through that. So really make sure you do the inner work. You can go get your coaching certificate, but if you haven't done the inner work on your childhood or your wounds, you won't be as impactful.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. You know, I had a friend who once told me that you can't Google life experience. And when I thought about it, that's so true. You know, you can go to all the seminars. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And so you've been through all this sort of, you know, turmoil and major life events that tend to screw a lot of people up and do it on a permanent basis. But you came out of it stronger. You bounced back and you did that inner work. And you saw, you know, you were able to take the good from that and what you discovered and to build on that. You know, it's interesting how the name of your book is The Cancer is a Love Story. When I first saw that, I was taken aback, but then you've explained it so well in our conversation, which I appreciate. I'm curious now, what advice would you give to someone who's searching for a coach, who's looking for the right kind of coach? Now, they can go to you, which I think would be an excellent decision. Let's say you're not available, you're on vacation or whatnot. Right. How should they go about looking for a good coach?
Well, I think, first of all, trust your intuition. You know, a lot of times we spend too much time in our head and not our heart and not listening to our gut, right? You will know, I mean, even whether it's a coach or anything, whether it's a relationship, or you want to feel an alignment. And if it doesn't feel aligned and you have a pit in your stomach, it's not the right person. Trust that. You know, the different coaches for different things. I'm not the action coach. I'm not the type of coach that's going to say, what three action steps are you taking next week before we meet again? I give homework and there's things I want them to do and they do that helps change the mindset. But I'm not that type of coach. I'm deep. So if you want deep, and I like to say deep and accelerated, but you might need a coach for weight loss that is specifically on weight loss. That's not the type of coach I am. So I could find the underlying beliefs around weight, you know, but if you're looking for a very concrete, goal-oriented, six-week thing, that's not me. So you have to get very clear on what you need in a coach. Are you looking for an action plan? Are you looking for a new life story? Are you looking for ways to reinvent yourself? Although I do a lot of that work, but you'll know the alignment. And sometimes too, you know, people will be gender. You know, you might want to see a different gender coach for different reasons. What's interesting about the gender too, when I was a coach in Boston, I used to coach on Boston Radio. And on Sunday mornings on a program called Common Ground. But 90% of my clients when I was in Boston were men. And I started, there's no science to this. This is just my intuition. And you know, coaching is much more popular now. But I wondered why, and this is my thought. And I asked a couple of the guys and they said, yeah, that's right. That there was a stigma. There used to be a stigma and it's changing a lot because of the mental health crisis becoming more open in the world right now. But there used to be a stigma about seeing a therapist. But these guys that would come to see me had no problem saying they were going to see their coach because they grew up with a basketball coach, a baseball coach, football coach, right? So a coach was okay. So, but what I loved when I coached the men, especially those that were in relationship and helping them open up, I would say, would you please go home and tell your wife or your girlfriend exactly what you told me? She wants to hear this. She wants to know that inner part of you. She wants to know that vulnerability. Intimacy is into me, I see. So, but you want to pick the coach that feels aligned with your needs at the time. And you might use different coaches. Somebody tell me what, Tiger Woods has 8 coaches? You might use different coaches for different things.
Wow, thank you so much for that excellent advice. You talked a lot about, you know, going based on your gut, you know, trust your intuition. There has to be mm-hmm. that alignment and that which is so true. And you talked about, you know, be clear on what you want and what your goals are. So you are aligned with your coach. If it's weight loss and you want an action plan and whatnot, you know, find a coach who works in that kind of area for in terms of doing that for clients. And but it's an interesting story how you talked a lot about how men were your clients for the most part, and they like the idea of going to a coach and not a therapist. And it goes back to that words, you know, how words go so far with people. And So
I want to say something else about the real life journey, which I think is, you know, really important to me. It's really important. Most people come to me because I have more experience. But I wanted to say something like when we had these curveballs, and you know, I've had many, and the older you get, you might have had more. But adversity brings wisdom. So that's really key. Adversity brings wisdom. And that kind of wisdom, you know, I channel through my intuition, right? So I just think that's really important to know. Is the person that's going to support you wise in the world? Wise in the world. Can they guide me through the bumps? Because there are going to be bumps. There's going to be many successes too, but can they, have they walked through some of them that I'm asking them to help me with, right?
Absolutely. And I love that, how adversity brings wisdom. And that's so true with your story, how the adversity you went through made you wiser and whatnot. And can they, are they wise? I think you said wise to the world, if I heard that correctly.
Yeah, have they lived through things? Have they had their bumps?
Right.
How have they walked through their bumps? I might ask, if I was interviewing a coach, I might ask them, what adversities have you walked through and what did you learn? What can you teach me from what you've walked through?
Wow, that's so true. And thank you so much for that critical advice. That's the advice I would use and apply when it comes to finding the right coach for me. I'm curious, now you've mentioned a lot of important life lessons to us, and I wanted to know, are there any other important life lessons that you'd like to share with us that you've learned yourself or from others?
Well, in the coaching, I just want to say that I believe that you can have all the credentials in the world and all the trainings, I know with my clients, I believe what really helps them heal is they're held with love and compassion. I can be direct and I can help them move forward, but I hold them with love or compassion. And sometimes it's the first time in their life they've been held that way. But I think the life lesson, this too, well, find people who can be present to you. And that sounds really simple, but we live in a very distracted world right now, you know, with the cell phones and the social media and all of that. That's not presence. And presence is the greatest gift we can give somebody, to really be there and give them the space to be seen, heard, validated, acknowledged, again, the worthiness piece. But to really just give somebody the space to unfold in front of you, and they should be able to return that. So presence is a key thing I look for in people. Can you be present to me, and will I be present to you? Can let you talk without, you know, giving advice at the moment, right? Just hear you. So presence. And the other lesson I learned is capacity. And I learned this when I actually was on TV for the first time, but align yourself, not just align with people, but align with people of capacity. And that's a smaller group of people often. People of capacity can hold you in your low times and your struggling times, but also in your success. It's very hard for people to hold you in your success. When you go up and elevate, subconsciously, again, subconsciously, it threatens some people in front of you, because they don't have the courage to do what you just did. It's not a spoken thing, but it's subconscious. And a book I highly recommend everybody read, that is, and I've recommended for years to my clients, is The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. As you go up, there'll be saboteurs that happen, and one of them is that people will go away. And some people will go away. A lot of people went away when I was on TV, that watched me rebrand, work 24/7 to get my new message out there. And then when I hit that new level, they went away, and I was stunned. But what I also learned is to bless them and be grateful that they were in my life when they were. I didn't change as a person. I just expanded and walked through a lot of courage, and I want to be around people that also are of courage and can respect and honor courage.
That's amazing. And thank you so much for sharing that. You talked a lot about presence, being there for people, listening, just being a listener, not necessarily giving advice. And you talked a lot about capacity and how sometimes when you become successful, it may inspire envy in others. And I think this happened with Oprah Winfrey when she said that when she lost weight, she lost some friends, which is kind of crazy, right? How that
right.
happens. Yes. But you bless them, right? Yeah.
Right. You bless them. And it's again, you know, as we expand in consciousness, we're going to be around people that are unconscious, and we're all, you know, the unity consciousness, we're all in this world together, and we're all at different levels.
Wow. And thank you so much for that amazing advice. I'm curious, you've obviously written two books yourself, and you're about to come out with a third. What are your favorite books that you recommend to folks? Any favorite authors or gurus?
Well, I love The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks, as I said. And another book I love, because it's part of worthiness, but it's not related to that. But I love the book Receiving Love by Harville Hendricks and his wife. And I'll tell you why I love that book. For many reasons, I think it helps in relationship. But one of the things about unworthiness, people who do not feel worthy tend to often be overgivers, and overgivers attract takers. It's all subconscious, right? So as you claim your worthiness, you want to attract reciprocal relationships, give and take, right? You want to be with somebody who can also give. But get this. It sounds great, but receiving can be really hard for a lot of people that have been givers and overgivers. And even just in my research for my breast cancer book, a large percentage of women that get diagnosed with breast cancer are in the helping professions, the givers, nurses, coaches, teachers. And they haven't necessarily learned to receive. And I had to learn through my cancer journey to make myself a number one priority for the first time, because I needed to make my body get better, to help my body heal. So making yourself a priority is really important. But back to the receiving love. So Havel Hendricks and his wife, leading marriage therapists, they were on Oprah, very well known. They were married, I think, 20 years, and then they hit a point where they were contemplating divorce, and they said, I don't know how this is happening to us. You know, we've trained couples all over the world. And they came up with the thesis that a lot of us know how to give love but can't receive it. And unless you can receive it, the circle can't be complete. But if you've been a giver, so remember this, when you're giving, you're sort of in control. You're picking what you're going to give. Receiving, you have to be more vulnerable to receive. You have to let go of control to let in. So it's becoming more vulnerable. So I would highly recommend that book, Receiving Love, and just practicing receiving, because if you can't receive, you can't receive money either. You'll block money if you can't receive.
Wow, that's so important, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go. Go.
It's so important to learn how not only to give but also receive, because they both go together. I totally agree with you on that. And so there's a book I recommend to people called The Go Giver by Bob Berg. He talks about the importance of giving, but obviously you don't want to be an overgiver, and which can lead to someone taking advantage of you as a taker. So totally agree with that advice. And whatnot. So, but in the book, he also talks about, in the end, one of the laws of giving is the ability to receive, which is something which I found very interesting. But you have to be good at receiving in order to be great at giving. So it goes hand in hand. I'm curious. You also, and thank you so much for the book recommendations. And you've obviously written two great books yourself, and you're coming out with the third one. And I was happy to hear from see in my research that you're also a podcaster. I always recommend to everyone to have their own podcast. Mm-hmm. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, my podcast is called Claim Your Worthiness: Intimate Conversations with Gail Jones. And it's a little different in that a lot of my guests are national thought leaders or international leaders, and I love local people as well. But I have a requirement that to be on my podcast, you must share a story at the beginning about a time in your life you felt unworthy and what you did to reclaim it. And what's really inspiring about that, it's just a short piece before they share their expertise on what they're going to talk about or their book or what they do for a living or whatever. But what's really inspiring about that is a lot of the people that share that story that are very well known, people wouldn't think how much they struggled with worthiness earlier in their life or through a certain circumstance. So I think it makes people realize we're all in this together. We're all trying to be better and we're all healing, and we all have a journey to get there. So, so I love the podcast for hoping, you know, for helping people learn new ways to instill their worthiness. And also, you know, the different guests, like one of the guests was Bruce Cryer. Bruce Cryer was on Awakening the Creative Genius. And he's all about, you know, the creative power within. He teaches at Stanford University. He's a president of a college. He was the CEO of HeartMath and a fabulous organization. But he shared his journey through unworthiness to becoming worthy. And it was pretty profound. And then he actually sang a song from his album. I think it's called I Am Me. And we played on the podcast. It was very beautiful to see him claiming, you know, his value.
Wonderful. And that's amazing. I definitely want to check out the podcast. I didn't have enough time to see an episode, but I definitely want to at least see that one with the music and whatnot. Can you describe all the ways that people can reach out and get in touch with you and whatnot?
Sure. So Coach Gail Jones on Facebook and Coach Gail Jones on Instagram, Transition Guru on Twitter, and LinkedIn is Gail. I'll have to spell my maiden name. Karnen, K-A-U-R-A-N-E-N, Jones. That was my byline. Karnen is a journalist, so I kept it professionally. So those are the three best ways to. I think LinkedIn is great, and Instagram seems to be a great one, too. So, Luke, for your listeners today, I'd like to offer two things. One is a 30-minute complimentary coaching consult. And the other is a handout I have on the 5 tips for instilling worthiness. To get either the handout or to schedule a 30-minute free consult with me, just email GailJones@claimyourworthiness.com. And Gail is spelled G-A-I-L. And I'm sure that will be in the show notes as well. But I would love to give that consult and send you the handout.
Thank you so much for that. Just so you know, all the information you provided us will be available in the show notes. So people will be able to see it and read it there and be able to easily connect with you. And, you know, I want to go ahead and thank you for coming on as a guest. This has been a very educational and enlightening conversation. And an episode I'll be listening and re-listening to for quite some time. Is it, if you can, and can you leave us, is there any last word or final send-off you'd like to give us?
I just want you to know you're worthy. You were born worthy, and you can claim it and reclaim it. And the world needs your gifts. You have gifts to give the world.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And I want to, again, thank you for coming on as a guest. And I want to thank everyone else in the audience for listening. I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. Everyone, take care and have a wonderful day.
And Luke, thank you so much. You were such a great host. You asked intelligent questions. You did your research. And it was a real honor, again, to be on your show.
Well, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, Coach Gail Jones.
Thank you.
Hey, guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcasts app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. We can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that would be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.
Also,